the Free to Play Network.
We invite people of all backgrounds
to share their stories.
Their nuanced conversations.
And forward thinking.
And not taking ourselves too seriously.
Everyone's story matters.
Every voice is important.
Life is polarizing.
But not everything is black and white.
Come join us
as we fade to gray. Welcome back, Fade to Gray listeners. This is Chris, and we've got a very special show for you today. But before we get to the show, I wanted to remind everyone that we have the Fade to Gray Network, and it's available right now with all sorts of content from every single podcast from the Fade to Gray Network that you love. I'm talking Mental.
Mostly.
Four in Toe.
Nope.
The Recast, Movies That Molded Me, Your Atheist Pastor. It's incredible. Wherever podcasts are listened to, you can go to Fade to Gray Network and get these shows. What do we got, like maybe like 14 episodes already up?
Yep, 12 Is mental right? episodes and one foreign tome episode.
And a couple of Movies That Molded Me. So it's really, really
There's
great.
And Your Atheist Pastor has had two episodes out pretty quickly. So she's also contributing. So give her some praise.
And definitely a couple of recasts as well. So it's great. It's really cool. We highly recommend that you go and check that out. It means a lot to us that you would go and subscribe to that. Today we have a very special guest from all the way on the other side of the world. He is a Nigerian pastor. Wisdom, please tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Thank you guys for having me. Wisdom Osaze Amedu is the complete name. You know, so I don't stress a lot of people out with the, you know, it's kind of odd. We give names here that they sound strange, you know. So I go with Wisdom Graceman to be able to introduce myself easily. I'm a pastor, like you said, but I don't call myself a Christian anymore. Then a husband and a father of two kids. So I'm here. I'm here in Nigeria. So a Nigerian, and I've been here all my life, you know, doing gospel, and just until my eyes opened to stuffs, you know, that I used to believe that digging deep into them, I found out that they were just crap, and I had to to get out of them. And it's a new journey, a whole new world, you know, for me, especially in my society, in my culture. It is strange to see people who tend to think differently, and they don't see things in the usual way. So it's not easy, but I believe it's better. So I have peace within me. I don't have to live to please anybody. I'm just free. And so that is wisdom. I'm happy, glad to be here. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, that's an amazing introduction to get into your story. There's a few things there, I think, that probably perked up a few people's ears, like myself, about being a pastor, but no longer consider yourself a Christian. We'll definitely want to get into that, but just for
sure,
all of our sake, who maybe are not familiar with your culture at all, what's Nigerian culture like? Is it predominantly Christian? Was your family Christian? Were you born into that, or is it something like missionaries came over? Kind of give us like a snapshot into your history of how you became Christian and what the atmosphere is like.
All right. Thank you. Nigeria wasn't all a Christian society from the onset. We had our traditional religion, you know, in Nigeria until we had an invasion from foreigners who came in and then shared Jesus with us. Let's say it's not up to, if it's too much now, I should say 100 and few years ago. Then I wasn't even born, you know. Then Christianity came to our shores, and our ancestors accepted it wholeheartedly, though they resisted beginning, but having to trade with the foreigners on the ground that they are Christians, they had to compromise their traditional religion just to trade with foreigners. It wasn't actually that Jesus appealed to us and then we accepted him. No, it was based on we needed to trade, and they brought something they sold to us, and we feel we needed them. As at that time in Nigeria,
it was an economic decision.
Yes, then. It was an economic decision. Thank you so decision much. And then
it's like Jesus completely saves, because if you don't accept Jesus, you don't get food or something, right?
something like that. So, over the time, you know, just took over. And then when we were born, personally, I was born into a Christian family. My father, my mom, my grandparents, they were all Christians, you know. So I found myself inside, and then, you know, life goes on until I decided to review some things. So that's it. That's the background.
Strong. You're pretty much what we call like a pastor's son then, here in the States. Like, would you say your family like heavily religious, or was it just like a mild influence to where it sounds like with it being an economic decision for you guys' nation, maybe not everybody bought in wholeheartedly at first, but after a century goes by, I'm just wondering, what is Christian life like? Is it, we have evangelical here as like a predominant Christian belief system. Would it be considered evangelical as well? Did you guys believe in the power of the blood of Jesus, I guess?
Okay. Christianity in Nigeria has a lot of phases and a lot of aspects to it. But predominantly here, we have the Pentecostal movement where it's all about power, all about revival, all about the Holy Ghost, you know. And we still have this.
Hallelujah.
We still have the Orthodox. The Orthodox Christians, and just like that, but predominantly it is Pentecostal. And Nigeria is a very, very, very fertile ground for Christianity. Christianity has taken over Nigeria totally, you know. So you are ashamed to identify with any other thing in Nigeria if you are not a Christian. So that's how it is. It's Pentecostal mainly, and then other denominations just like that.
So what got you started on your like deconstruction? Because I'm fascinated by this with the way your nation is. My impression is like you say, like there's that aspect of shame if you don't believe in Jesus or if you're not a Christian. So talk about your steps away from your belief systems.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. I count myself fortunate that I had this flair for reading. I love reading, you know. So I got exposed to materials, a lot of writings that first I wanted to be a very, very powerful pastor. That was the beginning. I wanted to be a powerful pastor. And so in the attempt to be a powerful pastor, I had to read all the revivals, the revivalists, the ghost generals. Then I read everybody that had something to do with the healing evangelist and everybody. So I started reading them, and then that broadens, it kind of broadened everything. And I didn't want to stop. I just wanted to know more. So I kept digging. You know, the thing about Christianity to me personally is that it promises you something. And when you go out to get it, you really don't find that thing it promised. You know, so I got out. I wanted to get that power that I believe was there in Azusa, you know, the Azusa stuff. And then, you know, I read what I could read, fasted all I could, and then the power wasn't coming. So anything that will help, anything that I see to be, that will share knowledge with me, that will enhance that, my crave, that will make me, you know, receive what I was looking for, I started reading, and then reading and reading and reading and reading. Then I also got upon the gospel of grace. That was, I think that was the step that took me closer to where I am today. I got to the gospel of grace. God doesn't want bad people. So I started, that was my background. Then I got into grace and I found that God was a God of love. I was so glad that I found that truth, that reality. So I felt that was the height of revelation. And then growing in that, I also get to find out that even grace was not so gracious, you know. A grace that is selective to me, that wasn't grace. That a grace that is depending mm-hmm. on if you believe and you do not believe. So I started thinking about those things and, you know, just started questioning a lot of things. And I think that was what opened it up for me, you know. Gospel of Grace, first I started reading Charles Spurgeon, and then I got to Joseph Prince, you know. I got to Max Lucado, and then whoever was writing Grace, I just got into everything that is Grace, and I started reading.
I think that's, you know, probably the way a lot of us started questioning our Christian faith was we thought, hey, man, like, I love the idea of grace, but there are parts of the Bible where it doesn't look like God showing grace to people, you know, and that's problematic. And so we start questioning that, and we can't help as people who are thinkers and people who have logic to say, well, something doesn't really add up here. Is that kind of what happened with you as well? Like, as you're reading all this stuff about grace and you're starting to question and you're thinking about the Bible that you've read before, what did that look like?
You know, thanks, Chris. Grace that created hell was the first problem for me. You understand? Mm. So a grace that had hell, that wasn't grace. This was my thought pattern. Our ancestors that lived before these guys came and took away our culture and our tradition, these guys were good. Our ancestors, they were good guys. You know, are you telling me that because they never got the chance to hear about Jesus, that they are in hell?
Yeah, I don't like that either.
So I thought of that. I was like, and God is gracious. What kind of grace was that? So I started thinking about it. But the thing is, you just think to yourself. You don't say it out. In Nigeria, as I'm talking to you, I've gotten like three times my life has been threatened in Nigeria that I believe things like this. You know, there was a time my car was broken because people weren't comfortable with the things I was sharing. They broke my car. They just, a lot of things, you know, started happening. I had to hide, you know, at a point because I dared to question what was popular. You understand? So
I'm sure. And you're a pastor too, right? You said, so you mean, yes, you have a congregation of people with this deconstruction that you're in right now. Like, how long were you actually like a senior pastor? How long did you have a church before you did this? Because a lot of pastors here in the States, when they go into deconstruction, they end up like kind of like stepping away from that church. And it's interesting that you're bringing your church along with you for that. So I can imagine there being pushback.
I've been pastoring for 13 years and as a church planter, you know, for the past 10 years, I have preached what they like, what everybody was preaching. And 3 years ago, when I started asking my questions, I was still preaching the way I used to, but I knew within me that these things were not adding up. So I'll preach to the people. It was kind of hypocritical, though. I wasn't satisfied. I was not telling them what was in what I really thought. So I preached what I felt they wanted to hear because I need to keep the church running. I have not got any other source of livelihood. You know, I have a wife and kids to take care of. So I have to keep the church running, keep telling them what they want to hear. They are going to heaven. You know, they are going to escape hell. I kept saying those things, but I'll get home. I'll be crying. You know, just be crying. What am I doing? I wasn't finding joy, finding satisfaction. So I decided to employ the method of teaching 12 amongst everybody. So I took out 12 people, started working on them. I worked on these 12 people for a year and some months, a year and 3 months precisely. And they saw, they questioned it, they felt, you know, it's not easy to ask these questions. So I asked them this question, answered it for them. We studied together. Then I got the 12 to start thinking the way I was thinking. And then I set out for another 12, you know, got another 12. And this time we were now 13 people working on 12 people, you know. And then I just started that, you know, gradually picking out the people, working on them. But at the point I am now, I can stand in church and preach whatever I want to preach.
Are people in your congregation finding the same like pushback? Is there threats on your congregation's lives that the same as you, because they're now believing the same things that you've come to believe?
Thanks. My congregants, you know, they are telling them they are going to hell. They are going to hell. They have allowed an antichrist lead them astray. Those that were feeble among them actually pulled out. I had people walked out on me. They were actually the pillars. Those I consider to be the pillar of the ministry. So they walked out.
Yeah.
And then, but the thing is, they didn't stay out. And that seed just needed time, you know, to grow. And, you know, the moment you ask your first question, you just keep going. I think it's a line. Once you cross that line, there's no going back.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Once you realize that something is not quite right with what you've believed for so long, like once you actually give in to those questions and go down that pathway, it's almost a form of enlightenment in the way that there's no way you could go back to believing anything than where you're at now. I totally see that. One thing I do want to mention real quick before I let Seth ask a question is just to say real quick, Wisdom is great on his Facebook Lives. He always does preaching and teaching on Facebook Live, and certainly you should go and follow him on Facebook. We'll put a link in the show notes. But one thing I really like that Wisdom does, he always said, this is my opinion. You know, you don't have to believe it. It's my opinion. And I think that that's a very healthy mindset to have. You know, he doesn't force his opinions on anyone. He's just saying, this is what I believe, you know, and you're more than welcome to believe it too. And if not, well, hey, that's cool too. So I really respect that you do that, Wisdom.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank and you. I want to just kind of back up what you were saying, in that like deconstruction, it's kind of like one thing after another. It's kind of like a domino effect, right? Like once one card falls, the rest of them follow. But I want to talk a little bit about the Nigeria, specifically looking at, you mentioned that Christianity is a really big deal. Is that like the primary source of income for a lot of people, like in your culture, in your society, to where they're kind of driven into the ministry? I was just curious, like, you know, what the comparison is like with the rest of the country.
All right. All right. In Nigeria, I think it's not, let's say about 40 to 50 years ago, that was when people started seeing the opportunity in pastoring in Nigeria, to being a pastor, that you can actually become wealthy, you know, just coming into the ministry. And that came about through, am I allowed to mention names here, or I should just keep people's identity?
You're allowed to say whatever you want to say.
100% up to you, man.
All right. So the person who broke that, who kind of modeled that prosperity life gospel in Nigeria, is the person of late Archbishop Benson Idahosa. He's a very, you know, popular guy. The first pastor to own a Mercedes-Benz some 30 to 45 years ago. He's late now. So just after that, a lot of people started coming into the ministry, owning private jets, you know, building university. And then in Nigeria, every young guy of my age that want to be a pastor has this orientation that is going to be big being a pastor. And so I started as a full-time pastor, no part-time job, because I believe you get into pastoring and you are cool. So the people are gullible. The people, they want solutions. They feel that Jesus Christ of Nazareth is actually the way to get out of poverty, to get out of sickness, get out of the challenges of life. They don't want to take responsibility for their life. And then all you just need to do is come out there and tell them, yeah, I'll pray for you and then money is going to come. I'll pray for you. You are going to get married. I'll pray for you. Life is going to start going well.
It seems, it just seems kind of common. I mean, it's interesting how you mentioned that's a big way a lot of people become wealthy in the country. It almost seems like that's what you're kind of led to do. And you know, all the promises that are thrown out that often happen and then don't come true, you know, it's tough business. But coming in big, that's good.
So tell me this. You've taken your faith and you've kind of deconstructed from it to where you say you're not even really a Christian anymore. What does that look like now? Like, what is it that you believe, and why do you still do teachings and call yourself a pastor if you're no longer, quote unquote, a Christian? And, you know, you even did a video the other day on being born again and how that's not really what is necessary, and how you kind of related it back to consciousness. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about what your belief system is now?
All right. Thanks, Chris. I believe that there's something to man that we are yet to be awoken to. There's something about man, you know. I believe in our culture, African culture, before Christianity came. I want to go back to African spirituality, you know, before Christianity came here. We had ways we handled issues of life. We actually didn't need this Jesus. We didn't need Jehovah. We had people in Africa who had insight into herbs and how they work. We had people who were naturally gifted as seers. You know, the first problem I had with Christianity is that they taught me that everything that is good about me came through that religion called Christianity. And I don't want to believe that anymore, because tracing it back to my childhood, I knew there were some things that were so special about me that people wanted to identify with. You know, these things, I didn't get them because I professed Christianity. And those things have been termed demonic. I want to go back to myself. I want to get back to being real, you know. I believe people can actually follow you for being you. People can follow you for being real, being yourself. You've got a way you talk to people. There's something unique about you, and people want to identify with that. I want to stop selling Jesus of Nazareth and possibly sell myself. You know, I don't want to sell Jesus of Nazareth. I even dug into trying to find how real that Jesus of Nazareth was. I don't want to get into that today, or maybe if you want me to. The only person that is real is myself, and that human being I can identify and relate with. I don't want to live by a book anymore. So I just want to bring out what is special about me, help people the way I can. And then that's what I believe. And that is my, you know, just getting to know me, being alone, embracing the dark side and the good side and everything about me, trying to embrace everything about me. I just want to love myself and then teach people to love themselves also. So that's what I can say regarding
preach
that.
Preach, wisdom. I love it. I love it. Sounds a lot like the way your culture was taken over by Christianity sounds a lot like what they did with like the Native American culture here in America. Basically calling everyone savages, you know, for having their own belief system that did not look anything like the European culture that, you know, Christianity had came from at that point. Tell us a little bit more. You mentioned some of like the highlights of like what like Nigerian spirituality might have looked like before Christianity. Kind of go into that a little bit more. Like what were like the practicing belief systems at the time? Like what was the predominant? Was it a many? Is it a monotheistic God, or was it like a polytheistic sort of system?
Or ancestral worship, or
yeah. I'm really curious.
I'll go with that. Ancestral worship was something that was dominant before these guys came. You know, Africans, we are very spiritual people.
Yeah.
Independent on Christianity, we had a way we relate with our higher self, and a lot of people based on their mental capacity may have done that in ways that were inhuman, you know. When these guys came to Africa, they met practices that were not that comfortable, like the killing of virgins during the burial of monarchs to bury traditional and what should I call them now, kings and rulers, you know. Then they kind of believe that you have to send a virgin to escort the dead, you know. That was a belief, and I believe that was based on their capacity, what they could see, because they weren't educated. These guys, I will also tell, say, though they brought a Christianity that kind of did more harm than good to us, but education came alongside. Enlightenment followed Christianity to Africa. So when we got exposed to Western education, we saw that the way we treated people weren't that right, you know. I feel if they just brought education to us, that would have been better. Mm. So ancestral worship, I think ancestral worship was just the definition, you know. They worship waters also. They worship the gods of the sea,
nature,
you know. So many ways, and they had result, I won't lie you, because I think this thing had to do, it has to do with what you believe. The only thing is that they did not understand that the ancestors they worship were once men like themselves. Hmm. And they could actually have worshipped or tapped into themselves. And I think that was their undoing. I think that's how far I can go, you know, in that regard.
It's deep, brother. I mean, honestly, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk about this, it's reminded me of some guests we've had on recently. Really reminds me of Kyle Butler's message. A lot of that whole loving yourself, finding yourself message, and knowing that we're all little g gods, you know, and even the message of Christ it sounds like I'm saying all this because I see you nodding your head. So it sounds like this is some revelation that you've experienced as well. How did you stumble upon this as a truth? Was this something that was like resonating deep inside you, or where did you find some teachings? Was there like a particular book that like opened your eyes to the idea that you, like you mentioned, that Jesus may not even have existed? Like, I mean, like this whole like, so like the idea of self and worshiping self, where does that come from? Is that just from your... Okay, I'm asking the same question multiple different ways, so I'm gonna let you answer.
Okay, if it came from a book, just we are here, my hands are, there's no, I'm not reading anything. If it came from a book, it won't be this original and real. If you see, I'm at peace, I'm relaxed, I'm just sharing what is real. You know, this is me just expressing myself. You know, okay. I can say because I was a devoted Christian wanting to experience the God of the Bible, I didn't want to fake it. That is happening. That's happening here also in Nigeria. A lot of people fake it. They fake Holy Ghost. They fake everything, you know. I did not want to fake it. If there is interpretation of tongues, let me interpret. If there is raising of the dead, let me raise those that fainted. I want to raise the dead, you know. I want to get into real stuff. And while I was, you know, obsessed about that, I kind of opened portals within myself, there were portals that opened within me, and rays of truth started flashing out, you know, from that portal that opened within me. The crave, yes, I had this crave for truth, and I didn't know that I should seek this truth within myself. So I tend to seek this truth outside of me. But so long that desire was there, the desire kind of opened up something within me. You know, this hunger, I had the hunger. I'm not going to lie about that. I had that hunger. You know, I needed to see Jesus. I needed this power. I needed to see this God. And that was all I needed, actually. I needed that hunger to open up my higher self. So that helped me. And once that door was opened and the light flashed out, I found the first realization was that God does not deal with me outside of me. That was the first realization I had.
Yeah.
That God had never had any dealing with me outside of me. If there is any God, I have only experienced him within myself. So that kind of brought me back, took me out of Christianity, took me out of the church, took me out of the Bible, out of spiritual fatalism. That's something I think I will have to touch, you know, before we are done today. Spiritual fatalism in Nigeria is something else, you know. You have to have a spiritual father to succeed. So I got out of all of that. I came home, and that was where the whole thing started for me.
Okay, so you said a trigger word, the spiritual father thing. Omar is my husband, and he and I worked in Alaska as missionaries for a minute, and that was one of the things, was the spiritual father's thing.
He wrote a book on it.
Yeah, there was a guy.
Guy wrote a book on it. He was so thinking that he was inventing this whole idea. And yeah, I guess it's a big in the Pentecostal church too. This is really interesting listening to you speak wisdom. I mean, I'm going to let some other people ask some questions because I feel like I could talk to you forever. I think it's, I will make this connection real quick and then you guys can take it wherever you want. But hearing you speak from this perspective of like, I'm looking inside of myself, this is the truth that I'm finding all the way across the world in Nigeria, and having another friend of mine recently impact me with some of the same like words, because it's something that, and the reason why it impacted me so much is because it's something that I always knew was true already. And it's just kind of like my, whatever you want to say, my spirit or my thing, just being like, yes, yes, this is, I mean, it's kind of scary because you're abandoning a lot of things you were raised in, but there's like truth in it. There's life in it. There's nothing that you're saying that I feel like Jesus would even argue with in his messages. And that's kind of like what's really crazy in all this. And so if anything, to me, I'm like, man, like, is this what God's doing now? Is this what we need as a message in like the quote unquote Christian church, is like motherfuckers, you guys don't need me. Like quit it. Like just like find, I mean, so many people here in the States, I don't know, is like always trying to find themselves. It's always like no one knows how to like find themselves, and they're all always wrapped up in like other people's opinions of them and trying to like have somebody else tell them who they are. But this message is so true and so empowering, but like you said, you can't make money off of that. You can't keep people coming back because they feel like they need that, because what they have everything they need inside of them. So anyway, that's not a question. That's just I'm noticing your message. Your message is beautiful, and it's one that like I'm hearing. I think God's doing something.
Thanks. Yeah, that's right. I can't really classify this to be the move of God, because we've had move of God and they didn't end well, you know. This move of God. this move of God, and I don't want to bring it back to the to what we are coming out of, you know. So let's just see it as a life, a way of life we need to embrace, you know, and not
like
just call it calling it any religious. We don't want to build a religion around this. You understand? The last thing we want to do is to build a religion around this, because religion wasn't good. It wasn't cool at all.
It was already hard enough for all of us to get out of religion, let alone try to get into a new one. Yeah, I really resonate.
I was going to say, isn't that what Fade to Gray is all about?
We're creating our own religion here.
Isn't that what we did? Isn't that what we did?
I really resonate with your story, Wisdom, because I've been listening to your videos, and you talked about how, as a kid, you're telling your friends, hey, my auntie's coming. And then 2 days later she comes. And back then there was no phones in Nigeria, you know? So like, how did you know? You just intuited it. It was something that you just knew. And I feel like I have a lot of that in me as well. I don't know if that's discernment. I don't know if that's, you know, just being able to look at our consciousness and our oneness with everything and just knowing stuff. Like, I don't know what that is, but I feel like I have similar gifts. So if, you know, what you were saying earlier is true, that you don't, you know, need Jesus to save you because you are already saved. You are already able to, you know, do that for yourself. Like, what do you have to offer to everyone? What is it that Wisdom can offer to everyone, as opposed to, and how do people find out what they can offer? Because everyone's probably got something that they can offer, right? Especially with the idea of a collective consciousness that we're all connected somehow, to love, to a source, whatever it may be.
The Matrix.
Maybe the Matrix, maybe we're in assimilation. I don't know. But like, how can people be okay with the idea of awakening that the self is what they need to focus on, loving themselves? Because once they can truly love themselves and stop worrying about pleasing a God that may or may not be there, you'll never be able to definitively say Jesus Christ is God and lives within me. How could you prove that? You never could, but you can prove that I exist and I have stuff to offer people. So like, how do you get people?
You have to breathe, Chris, so that he can answer the question.
How do you get people to realize that? And what are the gifts that Wisdom has to offer?
All right. Thanks, Chris. I feel if people really want to get to know what they have within them, they should look at life. How has life been with you? How has, you know, we live our life trying to change the way life is leading us. We want to change what life has for us. We want life to, we want to take charge of life. But somehow, when we discern the direction that life is taking us, because there's a direction you want to go, there's a direction you always, it seems you must go, you know. It's not every plan, every idea that works out. It seems there are things that are inevitable. They are bound to happen. I think we find ourselves most of the times in the inevitables. I believe we find ourselves most of the times in the inevitables, you know. I believe that what I can't change is something I should learn from. Why am I making one particular mistake all the time? Why is this circle? You know, Christianity wants to break the circle, but I think we have to go around the circle to learn and glean all the things that are there for us. And I think that's where we find ourselves. My life has been in a way, I live a very super fast life. My life is I've designed my life. You know, we read the Bible, we don't read ourselves. That's the problem. So I have studied the way things work with me, and I find that Wisdom, this is you. And then in finding myself, in knowing myself, I find what I have to offer. Instead of breaking the circle, let's go around that circle and then get those things that make the circle keep coming. get them out of, get the lessons. And I think that's where we find ourselves most times. For me, my life is a very fast life. I got to understand that things work. You know, I'm very fast in the things. I got married at 22 years. I was already married. You know, that wasn't really because I was a pastor, but I don't know what was pushing me. You know, there are some things about us that we want to kill. We want to get rid of. We think they are not perfect. We think they are dark. I think that's where our true identity lies, you know. So you just embrace what is not right, what is not good, what is not. We had this conversation before this program came up. I wrote something that Cain shouldn't kill sin. He should love it. He should. I think, no, you can just go through that article. So beautiful, you know. Anytime people consult me, they want to hear from me, I tend to have the right word to say at every given situation. I don't really think about them before. They just, it's like there's this utterance given to me for every situation. And that's a great gift to sell to people. I believe that's something to sell that is marketable, you know. Not really because you want to market something, but because it's going to go a long way helping people. They need to. I am concerned in Christianity. I was concerned about how Christianity will raise me, bring me to limelight, how Christianity will make me big. But this time, I'm thinking about people, how I can be of help to other people. I'm not really thinking about myself. So I don't know if I was able to answer that question, but I just...
No, that's good. I think... Yeah, absolutely. Like if people would stop trying to read the Bible and just read themselves, they could actually figure out who they are and what they want out of life. You know, no one knows if
that's
there's
a fantastic quote, by the way.
It was great. It was great. No one knows if there's an afterlife. Nobody knows that. You could never prove it either way. So all we're guaranteed is this one gift, this one shot at the present. And am I going to waste it following what may or may not be true from a Bible, or am I going to read myself and say, this is what I want out of life and this is what I'm going to do? You know, I really think that's an important message. And I think could really get behind that, they would stop living for a possible heaven or hell and start living right now. You know, absolutely. That's fantastic.
Thanks.
that was an interesting.
And if you're good at something, never do it for free.
An interesting statement, and I was gonna bring that up as well. Like, but yeah. Of course, I mean, if your life has been a minister and you've relied on selling Jesus, and you're like, well, I don't want to sell the Jesus in Nazareth anymore, and it seems like a bold statement to make, to be like, hey. Whenever people come to me, I always seem to have the right answers. But like, if that's something that, like, I mean, why not believe in yourself? I mean, the only reason it seems bold is because we've been taught, especially in Christianity, that like, oh no, you can't say something like that. But you sure as hell can say, hey, I'm a prophet and Jesus is talking to me and I can hear from God. Why not be like, I have wisdom? I mean, my namesake, you know, and I can speak that. Like, why does it have to be attributed to a higher power to make that seem more humble? Like, or it's like a sick thing, but like it triggers me when you said that. I'm like, oh, you can't say stuff like that. But then I'm like, well, why not? I mean, why can't you?
I want to say something. I want to say something concerning that part of it, that instead of attributing it to a higher person or God or Jesus, why have wisdom? I believe the first thing Christianity did, I'm talking about myself now, is to make me see myself from a bad light. I'm not good. I'm a sinner.
Right.
There's nothing good about me. I think Paul actually said that in me dwelleth no good thing. You know, all those scriptures drummed into me that I have nothing to offer. He said that also. They said, Jesus said that without me, you can do nothing. But since I said I'm no longer a Christian, I've been doing stuff, you know, without him. Without him, I'm doing stuff, you know, and a lot of people are doing great without him. So this is to say it's not really about him. This is about you. This is about me. This is not about anybody. This is about me. This is about you. And we have to start getting to value ourselves and, you know, come to realize that we are not what religion said we are. We are better than that. So I just wanted to chip that in.
I love that. Yeah.
Thanks for saying
because
that.
Yeah. You know what? My righteousness is not as filthy rags.
I mean, yours is, but I mean.
I really want to hear from Seth real quick before we wrap it up, because I'm sure we're about ready to. But Seth seems like he's not on board.
He's triggered.
I find it triggering. This, so, Wisdom, I 100% support you and support what you want to believe and this journey that you're going through with deconstruction. I actually think it's beautiful to see what's happening. I'm on my own journey, though, and I'm not there yet. So that's all.
He's still circling the parking lot to like actually leave to go drop some
ice. I kind of go in a circle. It's ironic. But
yeah.
So I
that's okay, Seth.
Just ask your question. Make your statement.
I don't have a statement. This has been a very interesting. Okay. Oh, nope, I do. There's something that I think that you mentioned is very important, that in going through this deconstruction process, that we don't make a religion out of it. And that that was mentioned and we kind of chuckled about it and a joke was made. But truly, I think that's a great point, that we don't want to make, you know, this new reconstruction or what life looks like after we've deconstructed, but we don't want to create another religion in the process. We're escaping one. Let's not create another one. And I think that's a really good point and encouraging to see.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Does does anybody have any other questions for Wisdom?
No, I appreciate you being here. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and I've been pleasantly surprised the things that you say have been saying. I think it's like I made the point earlier about some of our guests have been on the same vein of recent. And I'm wondering, and I'll make this point real quick, just about it's really interesting how many people that are deconstructing to this point come from a Pentecostal background. And I'm wondering if it's that thing that you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about it being the whole grace message. And once people like kind of like latch onto that as like truth to them and find that like somehow like freeing and empowering, it's like you can't let go of that, but you can't reconcile that with the rest of the book. So it's kind of like, how do I do this? So that's, I wonder. Yeah, I just think it's awesome what you're doing, and I appreciate you being on and sharing your story. And I just really hope the best for you, man. And especially because it sounds like you're getting death threats on your life and everything. I want Chris to say a prayer for you real quick because I've seen his prayers come true. So
I would just, you know, put it out there to the universe to, you know, that people would be unable to harm Wisdom, and that, you know, Wisdom would be able to be himself without fear of anyone interfering with that, and that love would surround him and that he would prosper. And I put that out there, and I really hope it comes true because I think Wisdom's a great dude. And, you know, people deserve to be able to question things like this and shouldn't fear for their lives for doing so. And we take that for granted here because, you know, here in the United States, I can say whatever the hell I want, and I'm not in fear of my life. You know, I've never really thought about that, but we are definitely not persecuted like that here. And it's interesting that the Christians would be persecuting the non-Christians.
The irony.
It is
the
irony,
right?
Yeah, it is.
Like the faith all about love, self-sacrifice, humility, giving to the poor, giving to the needy. And we're in America where they're voting for Donald Trump, and in your country, they're hunting
God,
down people
guns
who
and country,
disagree.
I'm telling you.
Jeez Louise.
Well, Wisdom, when is your podcast coming out? We need a wisdom podcast.
Oh, something happened. My lightings.
See what happened? They know you're talking bad about Jesus, so you turn your power off now. So.
Listen, this is what happens.
I hope you're okay. We'll make sure Chris does a bonus check for you yet tomorrow.
You can only hear everyone my voice now. You can't see me. I don't know what happened to the power, but it's all good, you know. I think you guys are so, so wonderful. You know, I just really have been looking for a community of people that, you know, will be free, yes, and accept what I have to say, you know.
We'll have Chris. We'll throw you into and tell you about Marco Polo, if you haven't heard about that before.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
the app, not the person.
It's like a face-to-face app, kind of like Snapchat, but better. Your messages don't delete. We have a community of people. We often talk about things like this, and so and it's free. Well, it's free to be in our community. Yeah, Chris will tell you more about it. But basically, I was saying like there'd be a way that we can like you know talk about this stuff like on a daily basis, kind of give you at least an online community, if nothing else.
All right.
So,
and everyone needs to make sure to go and follow Wisdom on Facebook, because he gives these type of messages all the time, and it's awesome. And they're short. It's not like you have to devote an hour or two to them. They're like 30 minutes, and they're really fun and really good, and I highly recommend it. So Wisdom, we want to thank you so much for your time. Do you have anything else that you'd like to promote, sir?
I have a Patreon page where I've written up to 30 or 35 articles around everything deconstruction, you know.
Love
that I've gone through. And so I have that, and then I'm working on a lot, because right now I want to actually be more on the social media than I think the message is there are receptivity. The reception there is better than what right now. I can't really go and do evangelism and tell somebody, hey, I want to evangelize to you to, you know, get out of Christianity, get into yourself. And, you know, I've gotten so much threats for just being myself. So why get into more trouble? So it's just within mm-hmm. me. And then my wife also, I've taken my wife through the journey. She came from a Catholic background, you know.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for her also. Took her through the journey. I took my dad through the journey, you know, just trying to win over. You know, one good thing about deconstructing is that you get your family back. Hmm. You get your family back, because religion created a lot of rift between us here, because in Africa, we suspect everybody. My father is a wizard. My mom is a witch. Everybody, you know, Jesus is saying that I should not get close to people. I should not be equally yoked with unbelievers. You know, a lot of things, you know, cut off relative, my cousins, everybody just. But deconstructing, I am able to love them with their imperfections. I'm able to, you know, become human again. I think it is doing more for me as a person than as a pastor or as a church leader. Getting to heal, getting my family back is all I get. I think that's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what's your Patreon? Can you tell us like a link?
I don't know how I will share that, but I'll share that with you, Chris. Is that
perfect?
Okay?
Yeah, and we'll put it in the show notes, and we'll share it on Facebook as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I love your message, Wisdom. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and we'll definitely keep in touch, man.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Wisdom.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off My Rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.